The Meaning of Marxism by Paul D'Amato. Chapter 5. No Power Greater, the Working Class. We have discussed the two conditions that make socialism both possible and necessary. One is the tremendous abundance that has eliminated the social basis for inequality and want. The other is the yawning contradiction of capitalism that gives rise to periodic economic crises. The third is the existence of an exploited class that can, through its own collective action, usher in a new society. The mystics of the Middle Ages who dreamed of the coming millennium were already conscious of the injustice of class antagonisms, wrote Engels. Quote, but the possibility for bringing about a real millennium lies in the fact that modern large-scale industry has called into being a proletariat, a class which for the first time in history can demand the abolition, not of this or that particular class organization, or of this or that particular class privilege, but of classes themselves. End quote. The struggle between classes is as old as class society itself. The first recorded strike took place in the 12th century BC under the reign of Ramses III. Building workers in Thebes who hadn't received their wages, paid in grain, walked off the job and took refuge in a temple until their demands were met. They also engaged in the first recorded sit-in. According to historian W.W. Tarn, strikes, an old Egyptian custom, were numerous, not merely riots in which the manager got beaten, but regular withdrawals of labor. More common in pre-capitalist societies, however, were struggles of peasants and slaves. Marx's favorite historical figure was the Thracian gladiator slave Spartacus, who led 70,000 slaves against the Roman Empire in 73 BC and destroyed several Roman armies before he was defeated. Peasant rebellions were numerous in ancient China as well as in feudal Europe. Wat Tyler led a great peasant revolt in England in 1381 against attempts by the landlords to push them into serfdom, but it too was crushed. What all these struggles have in common is that they could not impose their own social order on society because the material conditions did not exist for the elimination of exploitation. As A. L. Morton, author of The People's History of England, notes, the peasants could combine for long enough to terrorize the ruling class, but had no means of exercising a permanent control over the policy of government. Sooner or later, the peasants would have to disperse and return to their land, leaving state power to others. But the rise of capitalism and modern industry gathered a new class together into sizable workplaces, concentrated in large urban centers. That class is the modern working class, quote, that class in society which draws entirely from the sale of its labor, and does not draw profit from any kind of capital. Work under capitalism becomes a completely alienating experience. Workers control neither the form nor the pace of their work, nor the fruits of their own labor. Under capitalism, work dominates the worker, rather than the other way around. Forced to work at the pace of the line, the machine, the stopwatch, or the manager, workers become alienated from their own intellectual and physical potential. Every advance in labor productivity appears to the workers as merely a means to increase the despotism of the workplace over them. In Marx's biting phrase, the worker is degraded to the level of an appendage to the machine. Work becomes not something fulfilling, quote, not the satisfaction of a need, but a mere means to satisfy needs outside itself. Workers come to dread work, doing it only because without it, they and their families could not survive. But workers are not merely victims. By throwing great masses in one spot, wrote Engels, capitalism gives to the proletarians a consciousness of their own strength. The large workplaces, factories, hospitals, warehouses, offices, in which workers form part of an integrated whole, teach workers a collective discipline and cooperation that can be turned to their own advantage. Workers learn by their own experience that, in the words of American socialist Eugene Debs, quote, there was no escape for you from wage slavery by yourself, but while you cannot alone break your fetters, you can bring about change if you will unite with all other workers who are in the same position that you are. End quote. The key weapon of collective action for workers is the strike. Workers may be dependent on the capitalist for a job, but the capitalist is dependent on workers for profit. Without our brain and muscle, not a single wheel would turn, goes the popular labor song, Solidarity Forever. When labor organizes and refuses to work, the wheels of industry cease to turn, and the boss's sources of profits dry up. Thus, strike spikes spark fear into capitalists because they are a reminder, to quote Lenin, that it is the workers and not they who are the real masters. Workers first engage in strikes because they are the only means to secure immediate redress from their employer. But as an act of collective solidarity, striking helps workers identify their common interests with the whole working class. It helps them to attain class consciousness. The significance of strikes cannot simply be measured by their immediate results, but by the way in which they build workers' confidence in themselves and increase their fighting spirit. Every strike, wrote Lenin, reminds the workers that their position is not hopeless, that they are not alone. Quote, see what a tremendous effect strikes have both on the strikers themselves and on the workers at neighboring or nearby factories, or at factories in the same industry. In normal, peaceful times, the worker does his job without a murmur, does not contradict the employer, and does not discuss his condition. In times of strikes, he states his demands in a loud voice. He reminds the employers of all their abuses. He claims his rights. He does not think of himself and his wages alone. He thinks of all his workmates who have downed tools together with him and who stand up for the workers' cause, fearing no privations. End quote. As capitalist production becomes more centralized and concentrated, workers become more powerful beyond their numbers. If productive power is concentrated, so is the impact on the system when workers withdraw from production. A strike of transport workers can shut down an entire city, even an entire country. A strike of thousands of workers in a factory that produces some essential part can shut down an entire industry. Workers are strategically placed at the heart of production and can therefore have a bigger impact in the struggle than previously oppressed classes. All previous solutions merely replaced one kind of exploitation with another, one ruling class with another. But by the virtue of its collective social weight, the working class is the first exploited class in history, with the capacity to reorder society in the interests of the majority. Workers can't divide up the factories, the hospitals, and the offices and share them out individually as peasants would the land. One person takes a steel furnace, another a lathe, another a heart monitoring machine. You can't parcel out an assembly line. The only way workers can abolish the conditions of exploitation is to collectivize and socialize the means of production and distribution. But how do workers move from collective workplace action to actually challenging the entire edifice of capitalism? In depicting the most general phases of the development of the proletariat, summarizes the manifesto, we traced the more or less veiled civil war, raging within existing society, up to the point where that war breaks out into open revolution, and where the violent overthrow of the bourgeoisie lays the foundation for the sway of the proletariat. End quote. Real flesh was put on this poetic passage by the experience of the class struggle itself. End of section.